Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On Wednesday morning, I took one of my kids to school, and just about every parent in the hallway was talking about the election and wondering how to talk to their kids about the election. And maybe you've heard similar conversations or even had them yourself. For some parents, it's the challenge of talking to your kids about their disappointments and fears. And for other parents, it may be the challenge of helping your child navigate complicated social interactions because your candidate won. So for some guidance, let's turn now to Jennifer Sappas. She's a therapist who works with families and children in Beverly, Massachusetts, and she joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
And listeners, I'm wondering if you've been having these kinds of conversations with your kids. What have you been telling them? What are your questions about how to talk to your kids about this very divisive and toxic election and how we all move forward together? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So Jennifer, first of all, let me just start off. I mean, how many parents and kids have you talked to about this? I mean, are you finding that children are aware of the election and its aftermath?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this has been a topic that's come up in therapy sessions really since the start of this very different election season. And parents have been struggling with how to talk to their kids about the sort of language that's been used and how that's contradictory to sort of what we're talking to kids now about, how to solve conflict, how to talk about feelings. And for anxiety, children with anxiety, particularly the sort of uncertainty and emotional charge of this election season has made things very difficult. I think after the election, probably the most significant impact was sort of the collective shock of the outcome, regardless of people's voting preferences. And I think that sets a tone both at home and in the environment for children of more uncertainty, so more anxiety.
Well, so let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think that, again, just to underscore what you said, regardless of party or who adults may have voted for, I think this is a conversation in most households across the country right now. But it takes on different tones, and there are different sort of points of concentration. So, I mean, and there's always, when it comes to talking about kids, there's always the question of age-appropriate conversations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But let's just talk about, what advice you might give to families who say, who they themselves are minorities, or their children are, people of color, or they're one of any of the groups that were targeted in a sense during this election. And now, I mean, I've been hearing lots of stories about kids being afraid about their own futures. I mean,
yes.
How do you reassure a child?
I think that's a very real fear. And so this is the challenge in terms of there is something to be anxious about for many families and children, but with a sort of uncertain path. And so that what we rely on to cope in crisis in terms of the sort of activating things that happen in our brains and our bodies when we're anxious are happening, but without a clear path of how to help children to feel like there's someone in charge of the greater holding environment for them. And so I think it's very important for parents to be aware in schools and adults and kids' lives to be aware of the need for stability, for continuity, for reassurance that things are not going to change in their child's life right now. And to talk about how there's sort of systems in place so that sudden things just don't happen. We have laws that one person can't make one decision for an entire group of people, that they're protected, while also validating the fear. That's a very tricky thing to do.
Yeah. So how do you do that? I mean, just say you're speaking to, I don't know, an 8-year-old, 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there a risk in... You want to validate how they feel, which includes validating their fear without amplifying
it. That's right. Yes. And that's exactly the sort of middle path to find. And And I think what we can talk about are things that are helpful for anxiety in general, focusing on the present, what we can do in the here and now to reestablish our safety, to talk about the what ifs, to really very calmly explore and encourage dialogue with your child, to be very curious about what it is that they understand the risk to be, because we don't want to necessarily give them fears if they don't have them, which is also, you know, a common problem that can happen when as adults we're afraid too. And so to sort of slow down and talk very openly and encourage language that helps your child to be very clear with you about what it is that exactly they fear. And to be mindful of things like, you know, sort of.
Can I just get a little more specific
here?
Because, again, I'm just reflecting on some of the conversations we've had and heard on this program over the course of the week. You know, for example, of I heard a story of someone saying, you know, their child basically – they're immigrants, and their child after the election said, am I going to get kicked out of the country? I mean, this election has been so visceral that I think there are a lot of children who have actually, like, practical concerns, which – you know, they can't understand the nuances of what was said and why it was said during the election. They simply heard the words. And so, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, that's right. And I think that we do have to understand developmentally where the child is at in terms of what they're able to understand and how important it is to protect children from media and sources of information at a level that they're just not developmentally able to understand. And that's why it is important to first be curious about what they think is going to happen and then provide reassurance that we can, you know, in terms of how these changes are made, that, you know, some of these threats were made in a very emotional, angry way, and that doesn't mean that they were true, that a lot of what they might have heard is wrong, that their adults are there to protect them and to make sure that even if that regardless of what happens in the future, they will be there to guide them and who are those adults and have them identify who those safe adults are and to reiterate over and over in any way that you can what their context of safety is in this moment in their lives.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick call here. Patrick is calling from Milton. You're on the air, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
Good. Just a quick question. So as far as, you know, with all of the election results, how come there were no similar, you know, people there to help the crisis in 2008 and 2012?
Oh, when President Obama won and people feeling devastated by his victory. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I just find it curious the adjectives you're using, crisis, aftermath. I mean, this wasn't even a conversation in either of those election cycles.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, in every election cycle, someone is on the losing side, and they and their family and their children probably do feel devastated. But Patrick, I will assert, and I think many other people will too, that this election has been unlike any we've seen before in terms of the vitriol and the toxicity, and that it is different. And again, it has nothing to do with necessarily. Well, it does have everything to do with who won, but it also has to do with the election as a whole and the language that we heard for over a year, for almost 18 months. So I would say that it is a bit different. But to Patrick's point, I want to ask you, Jennifer Sappas, about the flip side of things. I mean, we've been hearing stories from teachers, for example, who have kids, students in their classes who support Donald Trump and whose families supported and voted for Donald Trump. And in a way, those teachers feel as if they have to create a protected and safe space for those students from the very deep feeling and heated emotions that students who didn't support Trump are feeling. I mean, those families and those students also have conversations and concerns as well.
Yes, that's right. I think it's a very good question. I think the one thing that we can probably all agree on is that this was a very different election, and there was sort of an emotional charge and reactivity and language of fear and language used that children don't typically hear from adults in positions of authority. And all of that created a climate of sort of confusion and anxiety that regardless of who you know, who the candidates are, really. It's just that context created increased fear. And I think that's why we're talking about it differently now, and why it's important that we sort of are able to regain a sense of, you know, this is sort of how we talk about our emotions safely,
yeah,
both in school and at home.
But specifically speaking about children and students whose families did support and voted for Donald Trump, and especially in a state like Massachusetts where, let's be honest about the makeup of the state, many neighborhoods and cities and towns are Democrat blue, even though we do have a diversity of political opinion here. I do imagine that many of those families are feeling like, you know, are they in a vilified minority, mm-hmm, now.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that there has been, I think there are, you know, many people who did not talk about, you know, voting for Trump, and maybe they did, and then their children are may be in a position of, can I talk about this? And I think it is really important every family has their own values in terms of what's private and what's shared. And often for many families, who they vote for is private. And then this is a very public discussion, and the landscape has changed in terms of how public it is. It's social media and all these things. And so I think, you know, really sort of talking with your child about what language they can use. And teachers and schools are very responsible for creating a climate that's safe, that's respectful, that talks about understanding differences, and hopefully really modeling. Like, look, our adults did not do a very good job of showing you how to do this. And it's probably because of fear, but we need to use fear to help us to change in a way that's constructive and works towards safety. And, you know, and look at this, it's even more important that we learn how to do this.
So my final question is to you, are we underestimating the resilience of kids? Because I wonder sometimes, and maybe I'll just speak for myself, sometimes I wonder if I'm projecting my own anxieties onto my children, mm-hmm, and that if I just stopped and listened to them, I might figure out that they've got this.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's why it's so important to be curious, because projection of parental anxiety is by far a greater risk factor for children than anything they might hear on TV, especially young children, or anything that's going on in a sociopolitical climate. And so I think being very aware of how you talk about your own fears and anxiety, and children are absolutely resilient. We have a lot to learn from them about how they manage through this time in terms of what we can do to be calm and to be clear and to be comfortable with that disagreement in our feelings.
Well, Jennifer Sappas is a family and child therapist in Beverly, Massachusetts. Thank you so very much for coming in and for your guidance and advice. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We'll be back in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.